Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another AAA Car Conversations With. And this time, the With is with Kelly Funkhauser. She is the, I had to look up your title. You have two jobs, apparently, at Consumer Reports, Program Manager in Vehicle Interface Testing, Head of Connected and Automated Vehicles. Did I come close at all with that?
Yes, I wear a lot of hats.
It sounds like you and everybody else at Consumer Reports does the same thing. And you guys just put out a pretty fascinating study about advanced driver assistance systems. And, you know, for our viewers and listeners, let's talk a little bit about what ADAS is and what it isn't.
That is a very good place to start. So ADAS is Advanced Driver Assistance Systems, which is the umbrella category.
Right. Yep.
And that includes everything from some of the active safety systems like automatic emergency braking, blind spot warning, rear cross traffic warning, all of those types of things, all the way up to some of the convenience features like adaptive cruise control and lane keeping assist. So when we say active driver assistance, what we're really meaning is the combination of adaptive cruise control and lane keeping assist.
Right.
Hopefully that was the most simple way to put that.
So, and it gets even more confusing with the level, you know, 0 through 5. And I like to think that kind of level 1 controls speed and level 2 controls speed and left to right a little bit. So a little bit of variation left to right. And that's sort of what it is. And, you know, one of the things that we look at when we look at some of these systems is when people go out to road test a car today, a lot of times I like to say to them, you know, you don't just road test a car, you road test the tech inside the car. So whether it's anything, and I know you do a lot with distracted driving, whether it's a lot to do with, you know, is the interface going to work for you? Is it going to be distractive? And are these systems that are put in the car, are they going to work for you? Are you going to, you know, how are you going to rely on them? And so is it as important to road test the tech as it is to road test the car?
Absolutely. I have told some of friends and family looking to purchase new cars recently that you have a lot to test before you ever get on the road.
Right.
You should definitely bring your cell phone and see if you can plug it in. Some cars aren't compatible with either Android Auto or Apple CarPlay. So if that's something you're looking for, you haven't even turned the car on yet to figure out if your phone's going to be compatible with your car. So yes, with all of the new latest and greatest tech, all the bells and whistles, there's so much to look for before you even get on the road.
Right. And even something as simple as I was recently in a Mercedes and it doesn't have a USB connector. It has USB C. So just when I think my charge cable for my phone can plug into anywhere, I have to get an adapter to adapt it down to this little mini connector that's tucked away somewhere in the, in this case, the center console.
Keeps life exciting.
It does. It does. Before we get going about the actual testing, tell us about the test center that you guys have in Connecticut.
Yeah. So here in Connecticut, we have 327 acres for our test track facility. And at our test track, we do everything from testing of the vehicles. We also do tires and child seat testing at our facility. All the other stuff like toasters and washing machines, that's done in our headquarters in Yonkers, New York. So I couldn't tell you a darn thing about a toaster and which one to buy, but I can tell you about cars, tires, and child seats.
But you do know who to talk to if you want to find out about a toaster.
I can get you a name. Yes. Yeah. And there's a really good website that I can direct you to of where you can look that up.
So we
purchase all of the vehicles that we test, which is about 50 a year. Mm-hmm. We purchase them anonymously through a secret shopper. So we're slightly different from some of the other auto testers where they may get a vehicle kind of hand delivered, white glove service looked over from a manufacturer. We are purchasing our own. And not only that, we buy the trim with the packages that are the highest volume. And so we're getting a vehicle that is most representative of what a consumer is likely to go and purchase. So that way, when we write about it, hopefully you're getting a review of what you're going to go out and find.
Yeah. And it really does make sense, because sometimes you can look at maybe a economy style car, but it has leather interior and heated seats and heated steering wheel. And you go, this is really nice, but no one's really going to buy this. And it's priced at a point where you could buy something much more competitively that's a little bit more car.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's why we do it that way.
Now, when you did the testing that you recently did, how many cars were involved?
So in the background, we looked at almost double the amount of cars as we have systems that we tested, because we really wanted to make sure that we were testing the system and not just an individual car.
Right.
And the reason we did that is because sometimes the even the size of a vehicle, you know, the placement of the hardware of the cameras and things like that can have slight variations in the testing results. But when it comes down to the systems that we tested 17 of the systems, and multiple vehicles kind of led to an aggregate score for a system.
And one of the things I noticed when I was looking at the news release about this, you tested 17 systems and there's 17 different names.
That is so true. Yes. They're everything under the sun, from what people have heard, autopilot, to just very simple driver assistance.
Yeah. And that's one of the things, and at AAA, we did some studies that showed that the naming changes people's perception of what they think the car is going to do. So even though, and they probably don't, but even though driver assistance and autopilot may do the same thing, autopilot gives you the impression that it's truly an autopilot, like being in an airplane where they take their hands off the steering yoke or wheel or whatever it's called in an airplane and allow the plane to fly itself. But in fact, none of these systems are really designed to replace an engaged driver, right?
Absolutely not. You know, the name may play a role, but that kind of leads to why we did this, why we put 17 systems and compared them to each other to really give consumers an idea of how all of these systems work and how they compare to each other, regardless of what they're called.
Yeah. And I think the big surprise was, and everybody knows Tesla and autopilot and how good it's supposed to be. There's, you know, a million YouTube videos of people playing chess and driving down the road and all the terrible things they shouldn't do. And it was a little bit of a surprise. Cadillac with Super Cruise ended up at the top of the list, right?
It did, yeah. And the reason for this is because at Consumer Reports, safety is so very important. And oftentimes it's what's left out of the conversation. You know, I read all of these headlines in the media of which systems are the most capable or who's winning this race towards self-driving. And capabilities and performance is just one part of the system overall. And we wanted to make sure that the safety is part of that messaging as well and part of the conversation. So when it comes down to these other categories looking at safety, Cadillac was able to pull ahead because it has an effective driver monitoring system.
Well, and that's one of the things that you measured, but can you take us through some of the other things that maybe you looked at besides the driver monitoring?
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost is the capability and performance, right? So we wanted to look at how able these cars are at performing the adaptive cruise control and the lane keeping. So we put them on road tests, we tested them on our track and put them through obstacles to look at the performance there. As you mentioned, driver monitoring, that is something that we believe is absolutely fundamental and essential for any system that has capabilities of performing some of the driving that, you know, the steering and acceleration and braking. You need to make sure that the driver is engaged and able to take over, because these aren't supposed to be a replacement for the driver. They're supposed to be assistance. We're doing this as a team. In addition to those, we looked at usability. So going back to one of those hats that I wear, we looked at everything from, you know, you hop into the car and how do I turn this on? What are the controls like? Are there settings where I can go through the menu and adjust things to personalize them? And then what do the displays look like? What information and feedback am I getting? And then we also looked at what we call the unresponsive driver or an inattentive driver. And this is really the safeguard that is there in case of the worst or the unexpected. Yep. These systems by nature, and the reason they're in this test is because they have adaptive cruise control and lane keeping. So a car is able to moderate the speed and try to stay in the lane. Well, in the worst case scenario where you fall asleep or have a medical emergency, we want the system to be able to try its hardest to bring you safely to a stop. It was so, just trying to do that before. Let's keep that going.
So it's not necessarily going to take you home, but it's going to bring you, it's going to bring you to the side of the road safely. And in some cases, even do things like put on the emergency flashers or, depending on the system, call 911, right?
The better systems do. Yeah. And that's something that we're trying to advocate for. If it brings you to a stop, you know, none of them at this point are able to pull you off onto the shoulder or anything like that. In the future, they probably will. But yeah, if it gets to that point where the car has come to a stop, probably a call for help is warranted.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, this is a little bit off subject and nothing that you really talked about, but is there a concern about hacking with some of these cars?
Data privacy and security is always in the back of our minds. Connected vehicles, there are different mechanisms for connecting vehicles, whether that's through the telematics system or through these other types of vehicle infrastructure or other vehicle communication. And we think that absolutely, you know, there should be a secure and privacy mechanisms in place to ensure that the cars aren't able to be hacked, as well as any of the information that is being collected by your car from these sensors or even a driver monitoring camera that I mentioned that's so essential. That information needs to be secure and used to only keep the system working, and it shouldn't necessarily be shared and transmitted and things like that. It should be held secure and private.
Yeah. And when we look at the rankings of not just the cars, but at the levels of automation, a couple of years ago, and I think you and I were at the same meeting in Connecticut, where Mercedes said, we're going to have a level 3 autonomous vehicle on the road in 2021, where essentially the car would drive itself until it couldn't. And I remember talking to the person from Mercedes going, so basically I have to be prepared to jump in case the car can't. Huh? And I always try to say to people, there's two things when it comes to driving, I love to drive and I hate to drive. When I'm stuck in Boston traffic, I don't love to drive. When I'm on a country road and it's a beautiful fall afternoon and, you know, maybe it's in a convertible, it's a great time to drive. And the idea that I have to be posed over the steering wheel, ready to jump in case the car can't handle the box that fell off the truck in front of me, just doesn't seem like a fantastic way. It seems like we should go from maybe Cadillac Super Cruise to level 4 and kind of skip over that level 3.
Yeah, it's such a complicated matter to even discuss what exactly defines level 2 versus 3 and 4. And I'm like you, I like to drive when I want to drive, but don't like driving when I need to drive. Yeah. And just the other day I was behind a truck and a garbage can flew out of the back of the truck and went into the roadway. And, you know, luckily I was actively engaged and was able to avoid it. But the idea that the car would be driving and I should be able to take over in such an instant like that is a little bit not practical unless there's a mechanism to ensure that the driver is paying attention. And that goes back to what I was saying with the driver monitoring. Not only do we think that it's essential, but it's, you know, almost expected. If you're going to have a system that is highly capable, you really should be responsible and put in something that is going to safeguard the driver and ensure that they are able to take over in, you know, just a moment's notice.
Absolutely. So that camera or monitoring system that keeps an eye on you that says, wait a second, you haven't paid attention for the last, even at 2 seconds at 60 miles an hour, the last 180 feet. It's time that you need to take back over and pay attention.
Yeah, I see the future of these systems working even more as a team with drivers, right? So if you're not paying attention, maybe they start to provide warnings earlier right? Or they see that you are paying attention, so they're not going to do that annoying lane departure warning when the system can tell, yes, I'm intentionally going around a pothole right. or a pedestrian. Yeah, yeah, I think that that's the future of where we're headed.
Electric shocks might be a good idea.
I won't go that far.
Okay, let's talk about how cars did then, and kind of take us through, maybe go from the bottom to the top. What cars didn't do particularly well that, you know, maybe even by name sounded like they should?
Well, the bottom group, there's something unique about those that is worthwhile pointing out. A lot of these systems have kind of two lane keeping systems. One that may be intentionally designed to not trigger until you're approaching or crossing or have crossed mm-hmm. a lane line. And then oftentimes the cars will have another lane keeping system that's trying to actively keep you centered within the lane lines. And a lot of the systems that fell towards the bottom of scoring in the capability and performance category are those that only have that first system where it doesn't necessarily activate all the time until you get close to the lane lines. And the reason that those vehicles and systems are included in this same report and they were part of the same project is that to consumers don't really understand the difference between those two systems. They don't know the engineering and the hardware and the software that goes into those. And it seems a little bit silly to think that there's a lane keeping system that doesn't really do a good job. You know, well, maybe sometimes it'll try to put me back in the lane. Well, how helpful and useful is that really? And so we actually think that one lane keeping system that performs better is better than two systems. And so the idea that these cars only have one lane keeping system is actually good, even though it doesn't perform as well. So they'll get knocked down in the capability and performance category, but they may see an improvement in their usability and understanding of using the system. So that's important to keep in mind with some of those systems. So that's why you're gonna get those lower scores there.
Yeah, and it's that perception again of, you know, what the whether it's the name or the salesperson who says, oh, this car almost drives itself.
Yep.
When in fact it doesn't come close to doing that.
It has the idea of the building blocks of driving itself, you know, the steering stuff and the speed stuff, but no, none of them are capable of actually doing that.
Okay, let's race up to the top to the Cadillac Super Cruise versus the Tesla Autopilot.
Everyone's favorite conversation.
Yeah. How are they different and how are they similar?
Oh, they're very, very different. The only similarities are that they both perform well at actually maintaining the center of the lane and doing the adaptive cruise control. So they both have smooth acceleration and deceleration with the adaptive cruise control, and they can both keep you in the lane for quite a long time. But the similarities pretty much end there.
Okay.
Everything else is so different when using these systems. And that goes primarily to the interaction of the driver's ability to collaboratively steer with the vehicle. And what we find is with the Tesla, the driver isn't actually able to apply their own steering and adjust maybe the lane placement. If there's a truck, you know, driving on the lane next to you and you want to kind of hang to the left, you know, you can't just grab the steering wheel and say, okay, let's just pull over here for a second. What happens is that the autopilot, the auto steering is immediately shut off. And so it doesn't promote this collaboration and teamwork.
Okay.
It almost creates this perception that it's like, you got it or I got it, but we're not doing it together. And then in the Super Cruise system, you can do that. You can, you know, move around. And then once you get lined back up in the lane, it'll turn back on automatically. So that's one big distinction.
So it sounds like the Tesla is a little bit of a bully.
You know, it just creates a different experience in the car. And I wouldn't say that the Cadillac system is the perfect system, the answer either. I think that there are improvements that can be made with that one as well in terms of the interaction.
Yeah.
So just different ways of doing the same thing.
Yeah, no, it's really fascinating about how the technology is changing. And it wasn't that many years ago that we thought we would be kind of on the road to self-driving cars next year. And now I think everybody's taken a little bit of a step back and saying, well, you know, maybe in 15 years or something, you know, there's some date that somebody puts out there that says we're getting close. And I think it's, you know, as advanced as the systems are, whether it's Super Cruise or Autopilot or others, it's really showing us there's limitations.
Absolutely. I have been an advocate for saying that I think we're further off than everyone likes to predict. For better or for worse, I would love to be able to just summon a car and take a nap in the back while it takes me to work again. When I need to drive, I don't want to drive. So that would be great. But there are so many variables really that go into this. And it's not just, you know, the randomness of the environment. And the answer isn't either that, you know, we would have, well, if all of the cars were autonomous and there would be no accidents, you know, people are still people designing these. And so the systems are only ever going to be as good as the people that designed them, the people behind the systems. And there's just so much that goes on the roads that it's hard to predict and create a perfect system.
Yeah. One of the questions I get about self-driving cars a lot is, can they speed? And, you know, there's a question. Can you set the cruise control at 85 when the speed limit's 60? And
That's a really tough question. And I try to stay away from the ethics. I try to stay away from all the legal stuff. My husband does that. And I just wash over, I blink when he tries to talk about lawyer stuff. So it's those are all the kinds of questions that we'll need to answer. And right. I don't have the answers for them. And I think
it's a fascinating topic of where it's going to go. I was in a car the other day that I think I had the cruise control set at 65, and that was the speed limit. And the speed limit dropped to 50, and the car slowed to 50. And I was kind of like, well, that I didn't expect that. And I was like, that was kind of nice, I guess. But I'm sure there's people that would want to keep going 65 and just push on the accelerator and keep on moving. So, and the other thing I've noticed, even I don't drive the cars the same way that the folks at Consumer Reports do, but I was driving, I think it was a Hyundai not too long ago. And when you kind of let go of the steering wheel a little bit, you'd notice it was jittery as opposed to some cars that seem pretty rock solid. And there's that difference in the technology a little bit that can change from vehicle to vehicle.
Yeah. And those are the things that fascinate me and excite me that I like to explore because, you know, I don't know what the correct answer is there either. Is giving, you know, this kind of hard torque resistance on the steering wheel, is that good or bad? Well, it can be both. It can be good. It can give you information and feedback as a driver that the system is on, but also then it may, you know, dissuade me from wanting to override it, right? Whereas, you know, one that's really, really loose, I may forget that it's on. And then if I'm, you know, going around and then kind of give up that tension, perhaps then it pulls me back immediately. Right. So, you know, it's fun to explore these and it's so much fun to play with all of the different systems and how they're implemented.
I bet. I remember when lane departure warning first came out, what I learned immediately was I'm a horrible driver because it's always telling me that I'm drifting out of the lane. And I think that's something that most people don't realize is that they don't actually stay centered in the lane. A lot of people tend to hug the left a little bit because they're sitting on the left and their vision's a little bit better there. You know, I think that's one of the things that is kind of a byproduct of some of what we're learning.
Yeah, that's exactly in a nutshell. The message that I try to convey is that, you know, systems, we're talking about lane keeping or lane centering systems. Well, maybe lane centering isn't necessarily the correct answer either, right? Maybe it needs to be lane off centering because that's how people drive, right? On curves and around, you know, big trucks and things like that. And so that's why we don't measure the exact deviation from the center line. And we instead look for how well it closely mimics natural driving behaviors. And most importantly, we look for the systems that allow that collaboration. So the system's on, it stays engaged, but I just want to go over to the side for a minute, but I want you to be ready and take over once we've passed this pothole. And that's the best design.
Yeah, it really is. And then a conversation for a different day, some of the technology that's involved in it. You know, the answer was going to be 5G, and it was going to be short range and all of the different technologies that were going to try to help. And that seems to be all kind of stuck in this muck and mire of technology right now, right? It's sort of somewhere between people that are old enough to remember beta and VHS.
Yes, yes. So one of those hats that I wear of connected vehicles is this issue exactly. And it's been an unfortunately interesting month with some of the ongoings in the political world with the spectrum and preserving it. But, you know, I think transportation safety is just so, so important. Vision Zero, we got to, you know, reduce the crashes. And it seems like such an easy technology that we can implement now to start saving lives.
You're absolutely right. And before we let you go, one more question. A couple of years ago, Tesla put out some of their cars in sort of shadow mode. So you were out there, you were using autopilot, and it was monitoring the mistakes and making back at the big computer somewhere, making corrections. What do you think about the technology kind of being in kind of a beta phase and the consumer not knowing about it?
So I think that it's okay and not okay. If you sign up for that, then who am I to tell you not to do that, right? Right. As long as the consumer and customer is fully aware of what they're signing up for, then go for it. I mean, I like to be the first to play with technology, as you can probably imagine. And so, you know, being able to access that and improve it are extremely thrilling and important to me. But if you don't know what you're getting into, then the idea of beta testing, you know, can be a little bit questionable.
Yeah. Is it as fun to disprove it as it is to prove it works?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's what you learn when you become an engineer is how to break things, right?
Right.
So yes, it's always fun to disprove and try to find the loopholes and to break things.
I think one of the headlines I read was Cadillac Super Cruise leaves Tesla in the dust when it comes to this. Would you agree with that?
No, I wouldn't. I would say that Tesla actually could really do very little in terms of adding sufficient driver monitoring and driver management to leapfrog Super Cruise easily. They're a very capable system that performs pretty well. They're just missing a few of those key important safety features. And I think that they, you know, could be unstoppable and at the top if they did some of those things.
Yeah, absolutely. If people want to find out more information about this report and some other things from Consumer Reports, especially the automotive side, simple to find, right?
CR.org.
There you go. Kelly, thank you for taking some time and joining me on AAA Conversations With.
Thanks for having me. It was fun.